is Over the Garden Gate, a program brought to you by the University of California Cooperative Extension Master Gardener Program of Tuolumne County. The mission of the UCCE Master Gardeners is to provide research-based gardening information to the public. If you would like to contact our Master Gardener Program, please call our hotline, which is area code 209-533-5912. The hotline is not manned full-time, but we do pick up our messages and we will get back to you within the week.
My name is Chris Mangini and this is Alan Mangini. Thank you for inviting us to speak with you today. We thoroughly enjoy our Calaveras grown roots.
Ooh, yay!
And see many faces from the farmers markets and fellow olive growers out there. So we're going to talk to you today about olive oil in the making. And thank you, Odile, for inviting us. We're really pleased to say we've been doing olive oil now for about, I don't know, 6-8 years. And I'm very pleased to say that in 2018, a Good Food Award awarded us Best Oil in America for American-produced oils. And that's competing against avocado oil, peanut oil, and everything. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
So what we're going to share with you today is, you know, in the beginning, how we make olive oil, and then we'll wrap up with why good olive oil or good California olive oil is best for you, etc. If you have any questions, just let us know. We're going to do a little tasting in the end, and so this should take us about 40 minutes or so, and then we'll spend some time tasting, and then, like I say, any questions, just holler. So I'm going to turn it over to Alan.
No. Okay, olive oil in the making, part one. You can remove that one. Okay, and this will be, like Chris said, this will be mostly about trees production and testing and what makes good olive oil. A little bit about me, walnut farm. My dad was a walnut farmer. My grandfather came here from Italy, and we settled in Contra Costa, the old Ignacia Valley area. And my whole family were farmers. And I left the farm, went to the phone company, and when we got done, when I retired from the phone company, then we started doing olive oil about 6 or 8 years ago, like Chris said. A recent picture of our orchard, a lot of the white on top is the new growth that came up just this year. And olive oil, we'll go into it. Whatever's next.
Can you use the microphone or speak louder, please?
I can, or that's not
or
for
speak
you.
Louder.
I can try and speak louder.
Thanks.
Okay. like everything else, we have a plan, and our plan is to do the certain things that allow us to make good olive oil. So this is kind of a time plan of what happens to the trees. They bud in March, April. They start blooming, then their pit hardening takes place, and at the same time, you know, you look at the soil, you do soil analysis, leaf analysis. Pruning, you can prune an olive tree just about any time of the year. Even when they're growing, you can go in and take little ones off. You don't want to get anything too big, but right after harvest into December, January, you do your heavy pruning. And then production, all the different things that we do, the deep cleaning, the analysis, the label updates. There's two analyses that go on. There's a chemical analysis and an organoleptic sensory analysis that takes place. Am I loud enough yet? Okay. Trees in the beginning, like in March, like that's when it starts. You go out, and a lot of people don't know that they get... You go by and you look and you don't see anything happening, but you get your little buds and blossoms. And if nothing bad happens, then a lot of those become olives. They all don't bud. It's like everything else. And they call it farming and not banking because you can lose a lot. Last year, early in the year, about this time, we had a freeze. And our normal production is about 200 pounds of fruit a tree. Last year, we did 17.
Oh my
God. We got wiped out. This year we'll be back in our 200-pound zone. Okay, there are natural enemies. The fruit fly, which is becoming pretty prevalent in California. It didn't used to be that way, but they're here. And They're really, really small. They like to get into the soft. They lay eggs in it, and it ruins the quality of the oil. We use these ball traps. Little yeast goes in it, little water, and it attracts a fruit fly. Chris likes to go out and monitor them regularly. And if we see them, or if we see them in a one particular part of the orchard, we use an organic spray, GF120, and we spray about an ounce in every other tree down the row, and that neutralizes the male fruit fly. If it gets over 105, they die. So I know that we get a little tired of hot weather, but I'm okay with it now and then. If I could have one a little bit every other week, it'd be okay. Thank you. Okay, this is the way the trees kind of look, but when I prune, I serious prune.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's one thing you can't do is over prune an olive tree. They're practically, can I say damn? They're a damn weed. They will grow crazily. They'll go from this to this in like in a year, and then they just get bigger the second year, and then it's time to go in and hit them pretty hard again. One way to kill an olive tree, a sure way, is to overwater them. They don't like they like water, but they don't like a lot of water. So a little bit of water is okay, but a lot of water, it'll kill them. That's the fastest way to get rid of one. What's olive oil? The oil that comes right out of an olive, that's all it is. An olive is about 40% water, you know. So I tell people when I mill for them, stop watering about a week or two before you're gonna pick, because you're gonna pay me by the pound to mill. So the best thing you can do is give me 40% water, because I'll get rid of it for you, but you're gonna pay me to do it. You can stress them a little. When they get just a little wrinkled, the oil is still in there, but the water's gone. So we try and tell people to back off on your watering before harvest. All olives start green, they will start turning black. And when you get to a degree of ripeness that you want, then we use the poles. We go out and we put tarps or nets underneath the tree, we beat the tree, they fall on the ground, and then we take them to the mill. So depending, if you could pick the same tree once in October and get the same olives in November and again in December, you'd have three very distinct flavors of olive oil. Early in the season, it's very pungent, very bitter, makes really good oil. Later in the year, in the next month, it'll be a little softer, and then in December, it'll be buttery and smooth. And so depending upon what you like, every month is different. This is the old method. And actually, they still use the stone and granite in some countries and on some varietals. The Coratina, which is a Sicilian varietal, they still grind them with the granite because it does something to enhance the flavor, and they don't like the mechanical methods. But so that's still being done. That would be my job, pulling it. The new method, we have a process that we do when we bring the olives in. You can see there, we'll take like 100. You see that little washer there? That's a hose washer. You have an idea of the size. They come in, these are pretty clean. And then we take the bin, I bring it in on the forklift and dump it into the hopper. And this generally is within less than 4 hours. We pick it. We only pick and harvest what we're going to mill today, which is why we get sometimes pretty good awards, is because we're a lot faster than what other people can do. They come in, there's a lot of leaves and sticks and things in them, and rocks, a lot of things that people pick up. When it comes in, it gets washed, it goes through a washer, and then a rinser, and now it's on its, that's what that process is. There's a giant vacuum, I'll show you in maybe the next slide. This is it. bring them in, we put them in that hopper. That's where all the olives go. There's a leaf remover up on top. It's a gigantic vacuum. It's just as the olives fall over the edge, there's a vacuum there, and it takes the leaves and sticks. Anything that's heavier than all falls down into the bottom. It goes up that ramp there, and that's the vacuum. Goes into a washer. That point of this is the little jacuzzi for the olives. You get a little bath, you know, rinses them out pretty good. That's a big tank full of water. I fill it up in the morning, and it recycles. They tell you it's good for a day or two. I probably change that water twice during one day, because it keeps them clean. And then it goes through the final rinse, the washer, and then it goes into this. And this is a screw elevator, all stainless steel, and it takes them into the mill room, into the clean room. And that's about it. The miller, my master miller here, takes over from there.
So he works on the outside, I work on the inside.
Okay.
And now when he was talking about the olives, most of the pictures of olives that you're seeing here today are the California Missions. Those trees that you saw in our orchard, they were planted in 1888. And one thing I failed to mention when we got started, when we bought the property, there was this beautiful olive orchard next to us. And the guy was going to tear out all the trees and build houses, but this is when the market was really doing well. Well, when the market failed, he decided to sell it. So we bought the 6.5 acres adjacent our property, which is back off of 12, you can't see it. And then we also planted about 50 pickles because we really like the flavor of pickles. So in our orchard, we have Mission, Manzanillo, Picholine, which is the pollinators for those two, and pickles that are self-pollinating. And so if you see, we call them our baby trees, we still hand pick those, and then we pull pick, like Alan said, the trees that are very old. But when we got the orchard, we spent the first 3 years at least cleaning it up, because the trees had not been touched for over 20, 30 years. But anyway, so those pictures of olives you see, and when Alan showed you with the washer, we weigh them, we cut them open. There's a scale that's standard in olive oil production that you determine what the... if it's a 1 through 7, how ripe it is. And we keep track of that year over year by farmer over farmer, so we can determine what the production is. And different olives produce, like an Arbequina, you get a ton of olive oil out of it, but it's got maybe a little lesser profile and a little less stability. Versus a Mission and a Manzanillo, you get about the least amount of olive oil out of it, but it's very stable, and it holds its flavor for a longer period of time. That's also a lot of times why you see blends, because it's perfect. You take an Arbequina, you blend it with a Mission, you have lots of olive oil, and it tastes good. So anyway, just thought I'd mention that. As Alan was talking, this is that stainless steel screw thing that he was talking about, and it moves really slow. And what its purpose is to move the olive oil or the olives into the hammer mill. Now, you can't see it, but you'll see in a later picture, our hammer mill is a great big stainless steel wheel, and it's got holes in it. And we vary which wheel we're using based on the ripeness of the olive. A lot of people think it has to do with size. And I will tell you, the bigger olives give you the less oil. They're harder to manage. But people think if they're big and fat, they'll get lots of oil. Not true. It's based on varietal. But what you don't want to do when it's going through that hammer mill, because it spins around and the hammers just basically crush it, if you're trying to push too much through a little hole, it'll pulverize it. And then the molecules have a more difficult time separating, and then you run into problems when you're trying to make olive oil. So that's why we look at those measurements, we cut them open, because we have to make decisions. You only get one shot at it on how to set up the machine to run those olives. So this is the hammer mill back here, and I'll show you a little bit more in a second. Once it pulverizes it, it drops it down into something called the malaxer, which is this machine right here. In the malaxer, we have steel blades that are very specifically positioned. It's also got a heated water jacket that runs around it. In order to be extra virgin olive oil, you need to keep it under about 75 degrees. We generally mill closer to 70 degrees. In the last few years, it's been so warm, we don't even turn the heater on, because overheating lowers the flavor profile, reduces the aromas, but gives you a lot of olive oil. So We don't care about quantity, so we really manage down our heat a lot. These blades start turning very slowly, and you don't want to open anything because oxygen contact at this point will reduce the aromas in your olive oil. That's why we have a very fine glass thing that we can look inside so we don't have to open it. You want to let that malaxer go anywhere from 35 minutes to an hour and a half. The longer you go, the more oil you'll get. But the longer you go also, the less the aromas, the flavor, and the polyphenols. And if you're familiar with polyphenols, that's the primary health property of olive oil when you see all the healthy stuff going on. And the reason you look through that glass is because this slow motion, what it's doing is it's trying to create like molecules to get together. And the ones we're most interested in are the oil molecules. And oil weighs less than water and, of course, pits and stuff. So you'll start to see the olive oil come to the top, and you'll start to see a very nice glisten come over the malaxer. And then you just have to make a judgment call when you think you've gotten to that perfect crossover point where you have maximum flavor and aroma, and it's time to move on to the next phase. And that's pretty much by eyeball. Once you move on to the next phase, you turn a pump on, and now you're going to move the olive oil, and it's going to start its separation. You know what, go to the next slide. I think I have a better. Let me just quickly say, this is that screw that Ellen was talking about. This is that screen. Once you've malaxed, if you want to look in here, that's what it looks like once it's crushed the olives, but now it's dropped it all into the malaxer.
I can do it. This is called a hammer mill, and these are the hammers. So when these olives come down, they are pushed through, there's a cover on this, and olives go in there, and these little hammers smash the olives against this screen. Mm-hmm. Then these knives, as they're going around, scrape it off. This is what the screen looks like, and that's where they're coming in, but then it drops it down into the malaxer. And like Chris says, you know, that we don't like to open it. Oxygen is good, it helps those molecules do what they want to do, but a lot of oxygen is worse. So we don't open it. There's enough air in the room to get oxygen in there so the molecules can do what they do. But if you keep opening it, it looks kind of like a watch pot never boils. And if you keep opening that thing, you're in trouble. You're doing bad things to the oil. Sorry.
That looks pretty well crushed. It's almost pasty.
Yeah, actually, we've already completed the hammer mill process at this point. We just opened it up before we did the rinse on it, so that's just kind of leftover paste sitting there. But it is. I mean, I have a picture of what the paste looks like.
So when it goes into the malaxer, it's all pasty like that?
Yes.
It looks like a big thing of oatmeal.
Oatmeal or baby food, yeah.
Okay.
If you want to go one more slide. Okay, so this is inside the malaxer. You can see the stainless steel blades in there. And this is actually a close-up picture of the paste. And if you guys can see, do you see that little glisten of the oil? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what you're seeing come up. It comes up on the side, and then once you get it in the middle, you get a little pool, time to go. So if you go to the next slide, here's what I wanted to show you. This is that second machine now. So we're going to move the paste over to the first phase of separation. And in here, there's a couple different drums, and they move really fast, like about 67 RPMs. And they move, the two drums move slightly different from each other. And the reason they're doing this is they're going to push the olive oil forward, and it's pushing it forward into a stainless steel container with a vibrating tray that goes like this, because there's a few little pits now coming out. It's not ready to eat or consume, but you get a little stuff in there, so the vibrating tray throws out anything that might come out of it. But out of the backside of the machine goes all the water, the pumice, everything associated that you don't want in your olive oil. We actually pump that out into a field that's just outside of our mill room. And at the end of the season, we scoop it all up and put it in a pile and compost it, fill holes, throw it back in the orchard, whatever we feel like doing with it. But the oil now comes through this vibrating tray and goes into a tank. Now, once it falls into this tank, I'm going to go to the next slide. I'm going to pump it over. This is another centrifuge that we have. This one's going to run at about 7,000 RPMs. And inside this, if any of you have ever made milk before, it's a big stainless steel centrifuge, and inside of it are 69 cones that all have to be placed in the exact right order with little tiny holes in it. And the olive oil now is up here, and on the backside, plus or minus 5 degrees temperature of that olive oil, we have a nice little warm bath. Because as we run the olive oil through the cones, very gently, I mean just a trickle, you run a little fine bit of water and you're doing your final cleaning at this point. So it goes through the centrifuges, runs through another little screen, every now and then we get a little something out of there, and then that's the final olive oil that you'll see coming out right there, and it's been about 6 hours since we started picking, and we're getting olive oil out of the machine at this point. One thing I failed to mention to you, this is our machine's called a cucciolo, which means puppy in Italian, so it's a small machine. In our Malaxer, we have two tanks, so we can actually do 800 pounds and 800 pounds.
Oh, it looks much smaller than that. 800 pounds, that's a lot.
No, if you go to some of the big mills, I mean, they run like 10 ton a half a day. Whoa. So this is considered a fairly small machine.
If you see those 4x4 bins, 4x4 by 2 bins,
yeah,
with the little holes in them, they carry about 800 pounds.
So one a day of those you do?
Well, no, we do.
We do more.
We do. The first one goes in, and it fills up half the Malaxer, then we shift it over, and we put another one in. And then, so we can run 4 ton, you know, a day, but Nick Shabika down in Modesto, I mean, you see semi pulling with 92 tons of olives on it. They'll run that, but you know, they'll run it like, but they run 24 hours a day, and they're just huge, so they can do that.
Yeah, and this 6 hours just basically is kind of a timestamp from you start picking from when you get your first olive oil out. I will run multiple loads in a day. It's actually easier to do that than start and stop, because every time you stop, you got to break the machine down and clean it, and that takes us a couple hours. So we do better to like work a 15-hour day. If you want to go to the next slide. So once the olive oil comes out into, we got a container there, and then depending on what kind of container you're using, but basically you wind up putting them in a stainless steel tank, and then the next phase of olive oil, because we don't filter, we do something called racking. And different varietals require different levels of racking. But for our mission, basically after about 10 days, we move it to another container. But when all the time now while you're doing this, you want to really minimize any oxygen contact, because oxygen causes oxidation. So we use, what's that stuff we squirt in there? I forgot what it's called. Gas, some kind of a gas.
Aragon,
thank you. Couldn't remember the word. So we aragon everything, no light, no heat, no air. That's the primary thing that you want to do to maintain the best olive oil for the longest amount of time. Our mission, and especially our Peachaline, we're going to have to rack 2 or 3 more times before we bottle it. And then also before we bottle it, that's when we have to do the chemical analysis. So, and I should also tell you, we did build a room in our mill room that is maintained at 66 degrees. 365 days a year, no light, no nothing, nobody goes in there. That all its whole job is to make sure that our olive oil stays at a perfect temperature until we bring it out to go to the farmer's market. So what is extra virgin olive oil? There's a chemical analysis, first and foremost, that determines extra virgin olive oil. You'll be happy to know that California has the strictest standards in the entire world for the chemical analysis for olive oil, which in California, the free fatty acids are 0.5 or less. Just if you were in Italy, it'd be 0.8 or less, and there's a lot of controversy over that. But you know, California, we always want to be the best, so we create the highest standards. And then there's a few other things, peroxide value and UV absorbency, and both those are kind of indicators for shelf life, etc. To give you an example, and the COOC also that's the California Olive Oil Council, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute, and they're the ones that established the California standards for us. Oh, one other thing I should have mentioned. There's extra virgin olive oil. In California, the only legal food-grade olive oil that's supposed to be sold is extra virgin olive oil. I don't know why I always see virgin olive oil. I hear about people buying pumice oil, which is totally not edible. So be careful, and we'll talk a little bit about labeling and et cetera in a few minutes of things you want to look for on labels. But I just wanted to let you guys know that there's a big difference.
Well, what happens with all that stuff?
Well, we actually produce pumice oil, and we sell to people that make soap, lotions, cosmetics. Did you have something, Alan?
When Chris was talking about the free acidity and the peroxide value and the UV absorbency, those things are usually caused by people. Handling, something wrong with your process. The oil stays too long in the malaxer. You don't get it out fast enough. These things that they're looking for are usually process or storage or some kind of a failure that humans cause. I tell people there's nothing I can do to make your oil better. The only thing we can do is screw it up. So the object is to understand what you're doing well enough so that you don't do the things that cause those markers, those values to go the wrong way. She was talking about lampante, lamp oil. That's, you can burn that stuff. The pumice oil, what happens with the pumice oil in the old days when they would take the donkey would walk around and grind that stuff, then you just let it sit. The oil sooner or later will come to the top, the solids go to the bottom, and they would rake off the oil. They would crush that again and do it again, and you would get pumice oil. Now they heat it, cook it, deodorize it, and sell it as olive oil. But they're usually adding canola or something else to it. It's maybe 10-20% olive oil, and the rest of it is some other kind of oil with it. So pumice oil...
But that's a low-quality olive oil.
It is a low-quality oil. Isn't it,
it's not olive oil.
It's something else generally, and you just made me think of something else, but I lost it that fast.
Well, my favorite one too is also you see something called light olive oil. This is one of my favorites. Light olive oil means that they exposed it to light to make it be less of a color. It has the exact same calorie content as regular olive oil. There is no such thing as light olive oil.
I was wondering.
A lot of people also think that the greener the olive oil, the stronger that it is. And I still think that's somewhat true, but UC Davis would tell you totally not true. Color is determined by varietal and time of harvest.
The only thing that color and olive oil, if it is brown, it's bad.
Yeah.
If it's green or yellow or gold or what, it doesn't make much difference. Brown is a bad color, but other than that, color almost has nothing to do with olive oil.
And then our other favorite is, how many of you have heard of cold press? There's no such thing as not cold press. If you're making extra virgin olive oil. Everybody cold presses. It's a marketing term, basically.
Don't pay extra for it.
Don't pay extra for it. That's right.
If you, like Chris said, if you heat it, you can get more oil out of it. So the COC and the International Olive Oil Council, they put a limit on it. Okay, you can heat it to maybe, I think the upper limit is 81 degrees. We run it sometimes in the 70s because we like to stay close to the ambient temperature of what's going on around us, because it helps the olives do what they're supposed to do. But almost nobody presses anymore. Everything's a grinder, a mill, a disc mill. Almost there's no such thing. The old hydraulic presses and the mats, and they would do all those things. So first press, cold press, and
that was going to be my question. What is first press? Do you run them through a second time, or is that...
You can run the stuff through the pumice. The pumice can run through. You can do it again. You get an inferior oil that you have to heat and cook and blend and mix with other stuff, and that's where you get into these pumice oils and things like that. So there's a... After it goes through the hammer mill, it's not going to go through there again.
Okay, so basically all of your good quality oil is first press.
Correct.
First
Correct.
Grind, first press. People have heard it for so long, people still say that. Will you press my olives for me? Yeah, I'll grind them, but I can't press them.
And you know, some of the larger producers do have a process for doing, like Alan said, running the pumice back through. You can do a lot of things with it. You can sell it for animal food, you can sell it for cosmetics. I mean, so if you're big enough to do that and you want to put that junk back in your machine, you can do that. We just have... we don't do that. Larger ones may, because they have a market for it that they're engaged in. Any other questions on this one?
You've been listening to Over the Garden Gate, a program presented by the UCCE Master Gardeners of Tuolumne County.